Answering your tough financial questions for the past 21 years, it's Hanson McLean's Money Matters with co-hosts Scott Hanson and Pat McLean. Would you like an opinion on a financial matter you're dealing with? Whether it is about retirement, investments, taxes, or 401ks, Scott Hanson and Pat McLean would like to help you by answering your call. To join Hanson McLean's Money Matters, call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON.
Welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean.
Thanks for joining us as we talk about financial matters, retirement planning issues. Both myself and my co-host, we are both financial advisors, certified financial planner, chartered financial consultant. We spend our weekdays meeting with people like yourself and come here on the weekends to be your financial advisors on the air. So whether you have advisors you're working with now or just doing things on your own or whatever the case may be, we want you to consider this place another source for valuable information.
And ask any question, financial related question you would like. Any. I don't care whether you think
really?
It is the smallest or the largest. Yes. And let me tell you where that comes from. So we have over 100 employees here at Hanson McLean. One of the employees came up to me today and said, you know, I hate to bother you, but could you answer this question for me? And had to do with her husband's 401k. And I thought to myself, you know, you work in an investment advisory firm and you started it by saying, I hate to bother you. And it was a relatively simple question. And I thought, how hard is it for the, and this young lady was in her, I'm guessing her late 20s, early 30s. I thought to myself, how hard is it for the average person to get good financial advice? So in that spirit, ask any question you want regarding money.
Right.
Are you all right with
I'm
that?
I'm good with that.
I know the reality is most of the clients that we work with are in their, that become clients of Hanson McLean are in their mid to late 50s, early 60s.
Retirement and planning, retirement transition.
Right stuff. That's who most of the clients that we end up working with. And they're normally not just starting out with their first 401k, but I think that
All right. Fair. Well, I got to tell you, with 23 years that Pat and I have been doing this program, and someone says to me, man, that's a big commitment all these years. And I thought, yes and no. I mean, part of the reason we enjoy doing it is, not everyone would be attracted to our firm or maybe thinks they need to have a financial advisor like Hanson McLean provides.
And many of them actually do think they need one, but they don't want to pay for it.
Right, fair enough. They don't see the value for whatever reason. Obviously, we do, but they don't sometimes. And then there's those that don't have much in the way of financial assets, and are precluded from a lot of the financial advisors out in the marketplace. And the only ones that would talk to them are someone who's going to try to sell them an expensive product.
Correct. So it's the kind of advice you give. So I do it with my nieces and nephews and my children and in-laws, that kind of a financial advice. So we're going to pretend you're my niece or nephew or in-law, and you call in and you ask any financial question, we'll help you.
Is that right?
Okay. Yeah.
All right.
Is that okay?
Oh, that's great. Yeah. If you guys want to join the program, we'd love to take your call, answer your question on financial matters. 1-888-2-HANSON is the number to be part of the Hanson McLean Money Matters program. That's 1-888-2-HANSON. And numerically, the number is 1-888-242-6766. And love to take your call regarding anything that is on.
Yeah. So last week, Scott, I think you ran the Boston Marathon, did you not?
I did on Monday.
How was it? I heard it rained. Was it?
No, that would be an understatement.
Now, how many times have you run the Boston Marathon?
This is my second time. I ran it 16, 17 years ago.
That long ago?
15. I ran it in 2002.
And what compelled you to run the Boston Marathon? Have you run the New York City Marathon?
Yes. But, well, the Boston's an iconic one.
You know what, Scott? I have a confession to make. I've never even watched the Boston Marathon on television, nor the New York
City. Nobody does.
Okay.
That's funny. Some other runners were complaining about how the purse for the winners is so low and these runners don't make any money. So that's because nobody cares about this obscure sport.
Yeah.
Frankly.
Yeah. I mean, how
NFL players make a fortune because people like watching it.
I would watch more marathons if you were being tackled. Let's say you are running down the street, groups of you.
And you don't know when they're coming.
And then you don't know.
All of a sudden,
just out of nowhere, and they're dressed in bright red. So you actually kind of catch them out of the corner you're on.
A good friend of mine is visually impaired. Okay. And I went out to guide him.
Oh, you've done that a couple times, have you not?
Yeah, I think this is my fourth marathon I've guided a visually impaired people.
And how many times have you guided this person?
Oh, I've done some training runs with them. Locally, and then I guided him by mistake at another marathon because his guide fell apart and I was available.
Oh, is that?
Yeah.
And is it hard to guide? Do you have like a...
Well, this marathon was the wet... It was 42 degrees at the finish, dumping rain. My son goes to school out there and he said the hardest rain he'd ever seen since he's been out there.
Mm-hmm.
Dumping rain and a headwind at 35 miles an hour. So most of the canyons dropped, the ones who normally win the race. The times were much slower. The winning time was
35 mile an hour headwinds. Really? That's hard to believe.
You know, you could actually go online and see a recap of the thing if you'd like. What do you mean it's hard to believe?
That's a big wind. 35 miles an hour is a big wind, and you're running into it.
Yes.
And so this was fun.
The challenge with guiding it wasn't very fun, actually. It was a really difficult
And what was
race.
Your time?
I think we finished just over 3:30. I actually ended up having to do near the end. It was an interesting day because it's a challenge when you're guiding someone. You get a little tether between the two, and you got to try to get around some people. And then the aid stations, you got to get in and get not only water for myself, but I got to get water from him. And there's people that slow down or they stop to get water. And my thing is just so you could navigate through all this. So it's a bit of a challenge. But near the end, we're at the come up to the 25-mile mark, almost there, and there was another visually impaired runner who was ahead of my friend Richard, who his goal was to beat Richard for the first time. Well, his guide was having a bad day, so they were slipping back. And I catch up, and his guide says, "Scott, here, let's swap." So then the next thing, I get swapped with this gentleman who's not only legally blind, but legally deaf. And he can't wear any of his hearing aids when he's running, so he's, you know, pretty much deaf and blind. And, yeah.
How do you do that?
Well, I didn't have any coaching on that. That was a new one for
me.
And
how far did you leave him?
I'm screaming at him, slide left, you know. And then the runners, Fred ahead of me, are turning around, looking at him. I'm like, not you. I mean, it was fortunately, it wasn't too long that we had to do that, and we finished fine. So,
and who won? Did the
blind and deaf?
He won.
Yes.
Well, that wasn't fair for him to switch the runners with you.
Fair on whom?
Well, for your runner, the original runner.
Oh, Richard didn't care.
Oh, he did.
He was happy for his friend Corbin.
Oh, okay. Well,
Corbin was having a better day. He was legitimately ahead of Richard.
Okay.
And it was only because his guide was having a rough day.
Weak.
He had hypothermia. Ended up in a bunch of people had hypothermia. It was cold. I'm telling you, people had hypothermia. People's temperatures were like 92 degrees, 93 degrees in the med tent. Their core body temperature dropped.
And this is why I don't exercise. Yeah, well,
it was I got to tell you, though, it was a really fun experience.
And then
overall,
you flew home that night. You were home the next day.
I was committed. I was back working the next day.
Yeah, because you were. I said, didn't you run the marathon yesterday? And you said, yeah.
So part of it, I've been married for 26 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I like to do these sort of adventures. In the early part of my marriage, my wife was, yay, you know, come and cheer me on. And then after a while, she's. And then it's kind of like, all right, well, how many weekends are you going to be? This is going to. So,
I
flew out on Saturday, came back Monday night. And,
yes.
Anyway, thanks for asking. It was an interesting experience. And Team with a Vision is the organization. If anyone's
Team
curious.
With a Vision.
Team with a Vision.
And it's a national organization.
Yeah. Team with a Vision. They and my friend Richard Hunter, who's a Sacramento-based runner, he's done a tremendous amount to get people to embrace running. It was so fun being out there to see. Other, not only people with visual impairments, but all kinds of impairments. There were people who had been, there were many veterans with a variety of disabilities or wounded out doing the marathon. There were people with prosthetic limbs out there, people in handcart wheelchair, hand bikes.
Oh, yes, yeah.
Because they couldn't have, their legs didn't work anymore. And there were even a couple dwarfs I saw out there. I don't know if that's the appropriate term for...
little people were.
Yeah, but I mean, like, that is a long way to go. Yeah.
That is.
Anyway.
And if you're a new listener to Handsome McLean, then you'll find out over time that Scott does... he's been airlifted out for broken limbs, and
I met a guy who was a pilot for rescue. And I said, he was talking about, and I said, I've been on one hanging from one of your helicopters.
So Scott has been airlifted out, and you were at one place where you actually with avalanches and looking for helping to find people. And
okay, let's go to the calls then. If you want to be part of Hanson McLean's Money Matters, this is a financial program. 1-888-2-HANSON is the number. That's 1-888-2-HANSON. Let's go to Georgia and talk with Bernice.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Hi, Bernice.
Hi. I am in Georgia. I'm 70 years old, and I have to take RMD from my traditional IRA.
Mm-hmm.
I have about $1.2 million total assets. Investments and cash, and I don't need the funds to live off. I get a pension and Social Security, so I live off that. My question to you is, I have 40% of my IRA in stocks and 60% in bonds. Other stocks, I have 24% in domestic stocks and 16% in international stocks. And other bonds, I got 42% in domestic and 16% in international. What I would like to do is determine what bucket I should pull the RMD out of.
You're awesome.
No, we're like later.
You are the greatest. You're the best call we've had in a long, long time.
Let me just really understand what you got going on.
How do you know all this?
I worked in finance I worked 42 years at one company, and I was in finance, and I kind of keep up with this stuff.
Okay, yeah.
You're great at it. Let me ask a question. Are you giving any money to charities right now? It's substantial, or any money at all to charities right now?
I do give quite a bit to my church.
Okay.
And the reason Pat asks is because the required minimum distribution, you could take, and you can do it in a variety of different ways, but you can have a portion go transferred directly to a charity, and it bypasses your income tax return entirely.
It stays off your tax return. So you could say, because your required minimum distribution is going to be about...
And I assume your home's paid for.
It is paid for.
So your standard deduction's quite large now, particularly with the new tax thing.
Yes.
So you're going to have your required minimum distribution, I'm just off the top of my head, is going to be somewhere around $40,000, correct?
A little more than $40,000.
$42,000.
$32,000.
Yeah.
Yeah.
About $32,000.
Are you looking at January 1's balance or the balance today?
December.
Okay.
Okay. We'll go with you there. So you can have any or all of that go directly to your church if you wish, and it will stay off your tax return.
So that's one thing to consider. That wasn't what you called for, but that's one thing to consider.
And Scott, would you look at doing maybe all 1 year and then taking 100% of the required minimum distribution to you the next?
No, because then it defeats the purpose. Because of
what I'm interested in is knowing if I should take it all out of bonds.
Yeah,
correct. So we're aware of that, but we want you to keep that in mind of the RMD, because that is a big, big question for you. Because it will save, even if it's $5,000 or $8,000 or $10,000, whatever the number is, it will be beneficial for you above and beyond probably anything else you can do, is to have that RMD go directly to, or a portion of it go directly to your church.
So here's how we would recommend this. So if you want to have your allocation 40% stocks, 60% fixed income, then when it's time to do your required minimum distribution, there's one or two ways to do it. Okay. One is just say, I don't care where it's going to come from, take the money out, and then immediately rebalance back to 24% domestic stocks, etc. That's one way to do it. The other way to do it is to go and say, well, if I have to take out $30,000, let's say, what percentages would I have in these underlying investments once that's done, and then do it pro rata based upon those percentages. So what that would end up doing is whatever asset class did best that year, you would be taking more from that particular asset class.
And that's probably the way you want to do it, is just do it pro rata.
Okay.
And the only thing in this portfolio is your international equity exposure might be a tad high. But
okay,
I don't even know how much I would argue over that. You're
no,
so
no,
darn good.
It's not
going to
make a difference. You're so, for the next 20 years.
Yes, but it's so good.
Yeah.
It's really impressive.
So what you're saying is I should take it out at the same allocation that I already have?
That's correct.
Yes.
Okay, and then rebalance it back to the same.
Yep.
Okay. I have one other question before I go.
All right.
I have all of my assets, my investments and everything, going to my estate as my beneficiary. Is that the proper way? That's the best way to do that?
Well, where's it ultimately going to end up?
If it goes to my asset, I have the distribution within my will to say where it goes.
Do you have, do you have children?
Tell us what that is.
I have no children.
Okay.
And I'm not married.
Uh-huh.
And it would go to my nieces and nephews.
Then will any of it go to charities?
Some of it will go to charities.
So what we would recommend, Bernice, is that you set up your beneficiary on this, listing the charities and your nieces and nephews.
But do you own a home?
Home?
I do.
And what's the value of the home?
About $160,000.
Okay, so I would carve out. I just did this with an existing client. Charities don't pay taxes on money that comes from an IRA. Your nieces and nephews will pay taxes on money that comes from an IRA, but they will not pay taxes on the property, your home, if they inherit it.
That's right.
Okay. If I leave that to the nieces and nephews, they would not have to pay taxes on that.
That is correct. So you leave, rather than just say divide the estate up as a percentage, you say the kids get the home, and you're thinking, well, they don't want the home. Well, they can sell the home, right? But they inherit it with a full step up in basis. And then the rest of it, you figure out the percentages of where you want it to go to, the charities. But it doesn't make sense to leave the home.
Or nieces and nephews still listed on there, just at a lesser amount.
That's correct. Yeah. That is correct.
But you're best off listing them, because the nieces and nephews, the rights that they would have to have an inherited IRA, you're going to lose that if you have your estate listed as the beneficiary.
That is correct.
Say that again now.
Okay. Yeah, all
right. Right now, when you list your estate, you pass away tomorrow. That $1.2 million is distributed, taxable.
As a taxable event.
This year.
Because
to them,
because they lost.
No, to your estate, because it goes to your estate. The estate pays the taxes, distributes what's left to the nieces and nephews. And frankly, the charity would get it.
But if you name them as individuals in the IRA,
then let's say one was going to get 10% just to make it easy. Then that particular niece would have $120,000, 10% in an IRA. What's called a beneficiary IRA, and she could keep that intact over her remaining life expectancy.
Without having to pay taxes on all of
IRA.
It in the first year, she could decide to take it all out the first year and pay taxes on it, or she could actually stretch it out over her life.
I got you.
So you may want to, Bernice, you may want to actually sit down with a qualified attorney.
Estate attorney.
And go through this. Because what we gave you, I would just pay the $3,000, $4,000, $5,000, whatever this
is. $5,000?
I don't know what they charge in Georgia.
Not $3,000 to $5,000 for a single woman doing a estate plan?
What do you think it's going to cost?
I don't know. $500 or something.
How much is it?
About $5,000.
Okay.
To do.
So you want to go through that process with an estate planning attorney. But you most certainly
want to change that. You do, because you might have some nieces and nephews that you want these dollars to make sure they're a benefit to their lives, and that could be there might be one or two that a big chunk of cash tomorrow would not enhance their life.
Yes.
Yeah. Right. Money has a tendency to make some people more of what they already are.
And sometimes younger people aren't, we don't all have a straight path upward, right? So,
So I thank you for the information. I think I got the major question that I wanted answered about this.
Thank you, Bernice. And do you listen to us on podcasts? Is that how you get our program?
I get an email, and I listen to you afterwards.
Got it. All right, good.
Well, thank you. Thanks for listening.
Yeah, thanks, Bernice, for being part of the Hanson McLean family. And let's continue with the calls. We're going to talk with Edward. Edward, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hi.
Hi, Edward.
Nice to talk to you. My wife and I have listened to your show for years.
Oh, good. Well, glad you're calling.
Yeah. I have a question about the future, if you will. I've just recently finished Harry Dent Jr.'s latest book, which he...
He's still around.
As usual, predicts disaster.
Yes,
and I'd like to get your take on.
He didn't always predict disaster. His first book was called The Booming 2000s.
Well, I think disaster sells better.
Okay, so what's your question on Harry Dent?
More about what your take is on where the market is going.
God, I can tell you that I don't subscribe to many of his philosophies.
He used to send out a, this was in the early 2000s.
The booming 2000s.
He would send out postcards. This is before email was really popular. He would send out postcards giving his prediction of where the Dow was going to be over the next couple months.
Yeah.
How often was he right?
Well, come on. He's not. Well, I mean, he wasn't right. He had the booming 2000s. You think the 2000s was booming for the stock market? It was a disaster. unfortunately, we don't put a lot of weight in his predictions based upon the previous ones, nor do we put much weight on anyone's predictions. So what we have confidence that 20 years from now, the stock market will be much higher than it is today. But the path between here and the next 10, 20 years, it's anyone's guess. I mean, I don't know who predicted the tech bubble and the financial crisis, et cetera, during the 2000s.
With that thesis, when we build portfolios, we that is an underlying thesis, which is that there all should be risk-adjusted returns that we should be looking at, which is how much risk, given risk, should be in a particular portfolio. Right, based upon the client's risk tolerance, not our risk tolerance, but the client's risk tolerance. So the first thing you need to do is try to judge what the client's risk tolerance is, and there's tools to do that, and then use some sort of a qualitative approach to a portfolio and understand how much risk is in that portfolio. So if you want to talk about your specific portfolio, we'd be happy to do that.
No, it's probably not necessary. Most of it is handled by an advisory company whose claim to fame is they got their clients out of the market prior to 2008. And they're doing pretty well with us. We just did a little readjustment a couple of weeks ago, and I'm pretty happy with where we are.
If you think that, if assuming they did that, if you think that's going to happen again next time, I'd do a little more research on how many people have been right more than once. If they don't exist, those people, they're unicorns.
That's a good suggestion.
They're unicorns.
Yeah, and just because they said it, have they documented the fact that they got...
We don't subscribe to the fact that any one individual or any organization can accurately time the market, and... Study after study has shown that if you try to employ that strategy, because you have to be right so often when to get in, when to get out, when to get back in, you have to be right so often that the higher degree of success, probability speaking, is one to take a more of an asset allocation approach which says that I haven't a dang clue what's going to happen in the future.
And staying in.
Mm-hmm. And with that, you're not going to have a retirement that gets derailed because of a missed call, a bad call. So that's just kind of our philosophy on things. So that's why I think with a Harry Dent thing, it's hard for us to stay.
I didn't even know Harry Dent was still around. Well, I assumed he was still around.
Well, it was Harry Dent Jr. I don't know if it's his kid. I'm sure it's the same guy. I remember there was some brokers used to go and have seminars. Harry Dent.
Harry
the
Dent
Roaring 2000.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Harry Dent, if you're out there, no disrespect of you, if by any means, we're just speaking to your work.
Yes.
I'm just kidding. I'm kidding. All I'm speaking to, and maybe maybe what he's doing now is wonderful. All I'm speaking to is my own personal experience of what I've seen. I'll leave it at that.
There we go.
Okay. We need to take a quick break here, but if you'd like to be part of the program, we'd love to take your call when we come back from the break. 1-888-2-HANSON. 1-888-2-HANSON. And when we return, we're going to talk a bit about rising interest rates and the impact that could have on home prices. So stick around for more Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Want more of Hanson McLean's Money Matters? Visit HansonMcLean.com/radio to get the Money Matters podcast.
Welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Scott Hanson here.
Pat McLean.
Again, 1-888-2-HANSON to be part of the program. And before we go back to calls, the real estate market, a home real estate market, is actually much more fragmented in the last several years than it was like leading up into the housing boom in the 2000s.
When you say fragmented, you mean...
There's some markets that are on fire and other markets that have maybe never... they still haven't come back to the highs that we've seen before.
And even in some markets that are on fire, there are segments of the market that haven't come back to pre-recession numbers.
It's been an interesting thing.
Yeah.
It's been a much more normal increase in real estate prices based upon supply and demand, not other external factors like...
Last time, it was based on capital.
Cheap
capital with no qualifying.
It's much different this time. So,
yes.
I don't see anyone out there predicting some sort of housing decline.
Scott, it is moving much more rapidly than wages. Much, much more rapidly than wages.
Home prices, yes.
Home prices have.
But I think the thing that we all need to be looking at now is, as interest rates are beginning to rise, at least on the short term end, what the Fed's trying to do, if we start to see that the economy is actually recovering, like the stock market says, even though we've had some volatility lately, overall, it's still the stock market has still shown that we are expecting to have a continual growth in the economy. And if interest rates continue to rise, every time the interest rate rises, it means for the same home someone's buying, assuming they're financed, which most people finance their homes, it means they can buy less and less of a house for the same payment.
Exactly. Why?
The rise in interest rate is the same as the house being more expensive.
Because most people borrow money to buy homes. Most people.
Yes.
Right? So what happens is because you're borrowing money to buy the home, what you can afford, most people purchase their home based upon what the payment will be, not necessarily what the value of the house is. So as the interest rates rise, the cost of money is more expensive. Obviously, you're going to be able to buy less house with the same payment.
So I think a couple of things to consider. One, if you don't have a fixed rate mortgage, and you plan on being in your house for a while, or you've been thinking about refinancing, I would not wait any longer.
Yes.
I'd get yourself a fixed rate mortgage.
And the refinance market is effectively dried up.
Yes, because money's more expensive now than it used to be. I mean, the time to get the money was... And if you've been considering, if you plan on buying soon, the longer you wait, the more challenging it might come.
Assuming interest rates are going to go up.
That's correct. Nobody knows.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you're thinking about moving up, now may be the time.
But you also need to consider real estate should be a long-term investment, no different than, say, buying into a stock of a company or a stock mutual fund. It's really a five-year hold.
At least. Just the cost of disposing of the property drags down the return significantly.
Yeah. Just 6-7%.
Yes. it's normally it's six, and then you add in all the other fees, it gets to seven.
Yeah, correct.
Yeah.
Not counting any.
And your personal residence is not an investment. Your personal residence, you consume your own home. So if you want to talk yourself into, oh, I'm going to buy a bigger home in a nicer neighborhood because it's a better rate of return, it doesn't work out that way. It doesn't work out.
Because it costs you a lot more.
It costs you a lot more.
And it's money that you could have been used somewhere else.
Correct. So don't, but the people will try to talk themselves into the fact that.
I had a sister, I have three sisters, who bought a house maybe just a couple of years ago. She had moved to a different area, and she called me one day and said, Scott, what do you think? I was thinking about buying this house. What's your opinion on it? And I'm like, well, let me get my crystal ball and see where the market's going. She was just wanted some validation, I think. And so, and of course, the conversation we had is like, I can't predict the real estate market more than anyone else can predict the real estate market. But it really comes down to, I said, if you're planning on being in this area, because it was a new area she'd move to, if you plan on being in this area for at least 5 years and you want to buy, then go for it. But if you think you might be moving in a year or two, who knows what home prices are going to do in a year or two?
You know, Scott,
they can be volatile over.
You say you can't predict lots of things, like you couldn't predict real estate prices. But I didn't see you buying any real estate at the top of the market, and I did see you buy real estate at the bottom of the market. So although you cannot predict where a price is going to be in 3, 5, 7 years. You do know that there are some times that it's probably better to be buying and better to be selling. Is that not true?
Yes. But maybe, and I suppose it's no different than how at Hanson McLean, how we look at our investment management. There are times when the risk reward looks a little differently.
Yes. Right?
So when you can, for example, if you can buy a company at really low earnings, Your chances of having a good return are better than if you're buying a company that has prices already ran up and doesn't have very much earnings relative to its price.
So while no one can predict any one asset class or market where it's going to be in 3 to 5 to 7 years, what we do know is that there are some indicators that would lead you to believe that there are better times to overweight in an asset.
But like,
class.
I'm 51 years old. My 401k is 100% in equities.
As it should be.
Because I'm not going to touch it for probably till age 70, Frank.
As it should be.
And if I were moving to a new city today, I would probably buy a house in that. I would most likely
buy a house.
Buy a house.
But
even if that market had already had a run up.
Assuming that you were going to be there 5, 7, 10 years.
Assuming I was
going
to be there a while.
Yes.
Let's take a call.
Yeah.
And then we'll continue on. So to join Hanson McLean, 1-888-2-HANSON is the number to be part of the program here. 1-888-2-HANSON. We're talking with Mary. Mary, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hi. So nice to talk to you.
Thank you, Mary.
I have one question in particular. And I'm going to retire July 31st of this year. I'll be 66 on July 7th. And when I retire, I have a decision to make about whether I take a single life pension through my employer or I do the 100% joint and survivor pension.
Uh-huh.
Now, the single life pension is going to be $3,200 roughly, and the joint is $2,790. Now,
and what's the remainder on the benefit to your spouse on the $2,790? Is it 50%?
I actually have options on that.
Okay.
I can go 50% or 66 2/3. But the reason I'm asking is my husband's Social Security is only $990 a month. So if I were to pass before him, I would be leaving him with nothing if I did the 100%. But his health isn't great. Mine is great. And barring some accident, whatever, I was wondering, would it be to my advantage to take the full benefit?
Do you have, is there a pop-up provision on this? In other words, should he predecease you, will this pension pop back up to a higher amount?
It doesn't say that.
Some have it. It's not the norm.
Is it tell us the company, if you're comfortable, that you're retiring from.
It's Dignity Health.
Oh, okay. Dignity.
I'm not sure.
It's actually
And they don't offer a lump sum.
They do, but I was kind of thinking that the smarter route to go would be to take the monthly pension. Just
and then what do you have as far as 401k assets, IRAs
between you and your husband, between the both of you?
Since I've carried most of it, I have currently my balance for my 403b is $390,000, and then there's the 401a from them for 22,400.
And how old's your husband?
He's 68, and I'll be 66 in July.
And do you owe anyone money?
Nope. Well, the house.
And how much do you owe on the home?
About $145,000. We live here in Folsom. The mortgage. So I'm paying like $1,100 a month right now.
Got it. And any other assets?
I do have an annuity that's like $145,000. When I transferred my money from, I used to work at El Camino Hospital in the Bay Area, and when I transferred money over, my husband was concerned about losing money. So when I talked to the Fidelity people, they just put it, I didn't even realize, I actually go to see, I've talked to Matt Crystal, one of your advisors, but I didn't even realize it was put in an annuity.
So it was your employer's savings plan?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So you have 560.
You know what? I want almost
$557,000 in retirement plans.
And this is a tough question, but you said your husband's not in great health?
No, he's had a stroke. He's had open heart surgery. He's doing okay, but it's one of those.
So one thing here's a couple of things to think about. You could. So there's different levels of survivor benefit, number one, right? So you can
do a
joint 100%, which would cost you the most amount of money. Or you might even be able to do joint with a 25% payout, which costs you the least amount, right? So there's a gradient there. I'm almost thinking, what if you did something where it would provide him a small amount, and then you bought a term life insurance policy for a shorter period of time?
A 10-year level term.
Yeah.
Or maybe two policies, maybe some for 10 and some for, and one policy for 5 years. Mm-hmm. So the worst would be you retire, you know, something happens to you the next day, and now your husband's like, great, now like money's gone, he stopped, right? Because your chance of passing away in the next 5 years, statistically, assuming you can pass a medical, which you can do now before you retire.
Yeah,
that you would know. I can't believe I'm saying this, Scott. The same thing is going through my,
and normally
you knew I was thinking the same thing too. Because people try to sell universal life or whole life policies this because they're big fat commissions and they retain value inside of them. And they'll tell you how great they are.
And they say it's a pension maximization, but you're
different.
Yeah. And you don't need this life insurance till your dying day.
And what you're trying to do is you're going through this decision, which is I want to mitigate risk for my husband, but statistically I know that he does not have a normal life expectancy.
But if you take the survivor option,
you're paying forever unless it has a pop-up provision on it.
And I don't think it does say it in the writing.
Okay, it would actually say it. So I'm going to go with Scott on this one. And I would look at purchasing, heck, I'd bounce back to Matt Crystal and ask him how much you should buy.
Yeah, based on need.
On need. And my guess is it will be less than $500,000 worth. And I like the idea of buying a 5-year term and a 10-year level term and taking 100% payout on the annuity.
Yep. And it's called a 10-year level?
Yeah, 10-year, a 5-year level term or 10-year level term.
Making the numbers up now because if you go through the analysis with your Hanson McLean advisor, Matt, he'll be able to come and tell you exactly.
And that way, he's protected. Your husband's protected for a period of time.
Which is exactly what I want. Okay, so here's the other thing. They did sell me when I went to the hospital one day, and I did get sold a universal health life. I think it's only $25,000. Can I just cancel that?
How long have you owned it?
A little over a year.
Holy smokes. And what company sold it to you?
Fidelity. I think it was Fidelity. I don't think I have that paper in front of me.
How much money are you putting into
Matt, it? I think you're probably going to want to cancel it.
Yeah.
Have Matt Crystal look at that as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's
noticed it, but since it was a little far out from my retirement, the last time I saw him, we were going to connect with that.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I'll have him look at it.
You'll probably want to stop it.
Yeah, and you're probably going to stop that and then look at a 5-year, 10-year.
But you want to get insured.
You want to buy the insurance before you make the election on your pension.
Yeah.
Because that election's irrevocable.
Yeah.
And
just in case they find something or whatever, or you can't get the life insurance you think you can.
It's going to change your decision making on the pension. So you want to get together with your advisor as quickly as possible to go over that.
Okay.
Yeah, and he can direct you. There's some good cheap online insurance that he can help steer you towards. So,
but your thought process is
I like it.
Yeah.
This is a big decision.
It's not like I'm wishing for worst case.
No. This is probably the largest financial decision you'll ever make right here on this pension.
Yeah. And you're being very realistic about the outcomes, you know, from a statistical probability standpoint.
Oh, well, thank you so much. And I have to say, I love both of you. My husband and I have been both to your Social Security seminar and your 7 Decision Point seminar. And I listen to your radio show on the podcast all the time.
Oh,
well, thank you.
You know, it's interesting. So we often talk about when people need to get educated to a point just so they can make wise decisions, right?
Yes.
And so the questions you're posing and the way you're thinking about this shows that you had some education, and we commend you for doing that. I think
and we talk about, if you've been to the Social Security workshop, we talk about longevity, right? That's one of the things, which is you have to take a realistic view of your longevity.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And I have to say, Matt also did that. You know, it's like one of those conversations people don't have until sometimes it's too late, but he brought it up almost initially. It's like, we need to talk about life expectancy and reality. So,
all right, Mary, we wish you well. Congrats on your upcoming
retirement. Wait, Scott, she was complimenting us. We could go on and on and on. This is the sort of fulfillment I've been looking for my whole life.
No, I get that from my wife and children at home all the time.
You were so lucky, Dad.
Thank you so much for the hard work you did and for providing for this meal, this particular meal. Thank you, Dad.
You know, Dad, this steak is underdone. This isn't cooked fully. I don't like my scrambled eggs runny.
Oh, my God.
All right, Mary.
Thanks, Mary.
Thanks for the call.
Yeah, glad you called.
Have a good day.
All right, bye-bye. Before we go back to this next call, Pat, I want to mention our workshops that we have coming up.
So this is called Retiree Beware. And I'll tell you
Really quickly, for those that think that maybe we're being self-serving by promoting these workshops, the reason we do it is because a lot of people come to them and they're educational. We're not trying to sell you something. So, you know, I hear these
We
ads.
Are trying to introduce them to our firm.
Oh, well, of course.
We want you to be clients, but we're not going to sneak up on you. Or danger or
whatever. And look, and not only that, just because somebody comes to us of interest to becoming a client doesn't mean we always take them on as clients.
There are times
we say it's not the right fit. So it's a time for them to, but it's not a big sales pitch on our firm by any means.
No, it's educational in nature.
And nor is it something where we try to confuse them to then sell them something more afterwards,
we're not going to tell you about planning for retirement and then sell you an indexed annuity, which, by the way, in this workshop, Retiree Beware, we actually cover.
And you'll learn how they work.
Indexed annuities and why they're bad for you and how they're sold. So this Retiree Beware is kind of at Hanson McLean, how many clients do we have now, Scott? Like
4,500 roughly households.
Okay. So it is a collection of what we see on a monthly basis of people that come into us and say, this is what I've done. What do you think? And it's the shop of horrors of things that people get sold, not understanding what they're getting sold, why they're being sold, how they actually work. And so we've taken all of these examples, obviously not using names, but taking examples of products, schemes that people have invested in, thinking that they were doing the right thing, and in fact, coming to realize it was terrible for them. And so oftentimes people will show up to our office and say, hey, I did this, I did this, I did this. What do you think?
And you're like, oh, man.
It's hard for us to help you.
I wish you would have talked to us before.
So we started doing this Retiree Beware. And
you know, it's really no different than I had a family member that had an early stage of prostate cancer. And so he took some time to educate himself, went to some he went to an all day workshop from various experts, wanted to get some education before he chose some path.
And
he didn't take the advice of his first doctor. Second opinion was much different. His first doctor wanted to schedule surgery the next week.
And the second doctor was like,
didn't think surgery was appropriate. And anyway, it was a different course. But so
he educated himself. Right. And so that's what this is about is, and you'll find it.
March into retirement.
If you go to our website,
or
invest any money anywhere, you'll go to our website, HansonMcLean.com. You can register at HansonMcLean.com as well as look at the other educational materials that we have there. But we have, this workshop coming up called Retiree Beware. It's a live workshop in Sacramento. We have the week of April 29th in Auburn, Rancho Cordova, Roseville, and Sacramento. The week of May 13th, we have them in Denver, Cherry Creek, Highlands Ranch, and Broomfield, and in the Bay Area. The week of May the 6th in Danville, Petaluma, Pleasanton, and Burlingame. So, I've done a couple of these. We did them internally for our staff, and then we did some for a select group of people and to see how it was received, and we got good reviews on them.
Yeah. So we'll
Retiree Beware.
And again, go to HansonMcLean.com for all the information. Now let's continue on with call. Let's talk with Tony. Tony, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hi.
Hi, Tony.
Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, thank you.
So I have a question about whether I need a living trust. Right now, all my financial accounts are titled as transfer and death, or they use beneficiaries.
Okay.
And my house is also titled with transfer and death.
Mm-hmm.
And I already have a will with the power of attorney and the health the medical directive in it.
Okay.
So I'm trying to figure out if there's any reason I might still need a trust, a living trust.
Yeah. Oh, so to clarify, we're not licensed attorneys, so we can't provide legal advice. So I can't give you a legal answer on that. If I were in your situation, I would not get a living trust.
What's the size of the estate?
Probably about 600,000 now.
Okay, and the money goes straight there. You don't
He's
have
got everything already
any restrictions on how it's spent, anything like that at all?
No, nothing like that.
How much of the money's in the IRA? 600,000.
See, maybe 30,000.
I'm gonna go with Scott.
I don't see any Yeah. If I were Tony, and I had all my assets,
TOD,
except for my car, I'm assuming. Does the DMV allow you to transfer death?
I have no idea. Let them fight over the car.
Well, it's a simple process. When what's left of the estate is small, it's a very simple process. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought when it was a small amount.
And by the way, just because you have a living trust does not mean there's no work to be done when you pass away.
That's correct.
And it doesn't mean that there's no legal fees when you pass away. Because, right? I mean, that's the reality.
Yeah. So on 600,000, how it's set up?
I think you're fine.
Yeah.
Unless there's some other issues that we haven't been uncovered.
But we're not attorneys, but you ask us an opinion.
Yeah.
Right. You understand that.
All right.
So Yeah, one more thing on that.
Go for it.
I thought there's a small amount left that's not, you know, transfer and death and all that, that survivor can actually request that it not have to go through probate.
Yeah, because it'd be a small amount.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Your probatable assets would be next to nothing.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That's
so. And just to clear, you're single, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yep. I'm with you.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
All right, Tony.
Thanks.
Great.
Yeah. Wish you well.
Thank you.
Yeah. And it's the only challenge, the reason I think we are hesitant when we answer these questions is because sometimes we see people that will list a child jointly on an account. These are all set up as transfer at death. So they're still in Tony's name, but Tony
only.
Tony passed away, then it gets transferred.
Only in Tony's name.
Well, we don't have much time left in the program. My apologies. And I want to, and again, I feel this is a bit self-serving, but it's not self-serving because I want to mention a couple things on our Hans McLean's website. Our learning library is full of some great stuff, but we've got a blog on there, a recent blog on the three benefits of working with an independent fee-based advisor. Whether it's Hans McLean or somebody else, there's other great advisors out there. We understand that, and but we think there's tremendous value when someone works with an independent fee-based advisor,
someone who acts as a fiduciary. And again, in the industry rags that come out, the argument about fiduciary versus non-fiduciary.
Well, the Securities Exchange Commission is trying to push a uniform standard.
Again.
Well, because the Department of Labor really never got theirs through.
Yes. How long has this been going on? 6, 7 years? 8 years?
Like that.
And who fights it?
The old line securities brokers.
The commission-based.
The firms you can think of, yes.
Commission-based. Commission. Although, you know, it's interesting. They fight it, but it's changed their business model. More and more of them are starting to become fiduciaries or fee-based.
The challenge those big firms have, though, they still manufacture their own products.
Yes.
And so they're not, they live in a world of conflicts.
Yes.
And they don't receive unbiased research.
Yeah. And yeah, correct. Correct.
I mean, that's part of it. So anyway, this blog talks about how compensation structures work with advisors, third party custodians, why that can be tremendously beneficial. So you don't have to worry about someone manufacturing their own product, for as an example, and why your money is safe and don't have to worry about investing and, you know, being taken advantage of, and really the importance of independence. So that's all in that blog. Also, our learning library has got all kinds of great information, guides, tutorials, webinars, etc. So feel free to join it. We're out of time. We're here every Saturday, this same time, the same station. You've been listening to Hans McLean's Money Matters. We'll see you next week.
This program has been brought to you by Hanson McLean Advisors, a registered investment advisory firm. Any ideas presented during this program are not intended to provide specific financial advice, and you should consult your own financial advisor, tax consultant, or estate planning attorney to conduct your own due diligence.